With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Good afternoon. This is Stephen Campbell, your host for Murders, Mysteries, and Mayhem. Today is Monday, January 20th, and this is episode number 33. My guest today is the award-winning and best-selling author of the Bobby's Diner series, Susan Wingate. The third book in the series, Sacrifice at Sea, was released at the end of last month. Susan is also the host of the popular and long-running radio show, Dialogue Between the Lines. Today we're turning the tables on Susan, and she'll be the one answering the questions. Susan's love of writing is something that comes through very clearly in this interview.
I don't think anything is a pleasant diversion from writing. I think anytime we're diverted from writing, it's irritating at best. I don't enjoy doing anything as much as I do writing.
Before we get to the full interview, my new book, Hunter's Gamble, is going through an exhaustive beta reading process, and the early input I've heard from some of the members of the beta group has been gratifying. I'll have some revisions to make based on the feedback, but I'm hoping to get the book to my editors by early February, so we stay on track for a March release. While that's going on, we're also working on cover design and beginning to put together a marketing plan for the book. And, of course, I'm working on writing the next book in the series. You can stay up to date with the series and what's going on with my book at my website, StephenRCampbell.com. As you know, my show, Murders, Mysteries, and Mayhem, is a member of the Authors on the Air Network. What you may not know is that the Authors on the Air Network doesn't just do author interviews, we also do educational programming. This month, Lori Hayes is hosting a series called Behind the Scenes on Behind the Words with Lori Hayes. I've asked Lori to stop by and tell us what she's doing with this series.
Hi, Stephen. Well, thanks for asking. We have Behind the Scenes on Behind the Words this month, where we are introducing our author listeners as well as listeners who are interested in learning about the world of publishing to a publisher, an illustrator, an agent, and an editor. And the goal of the shows are to really just help everybody understand what goes on behind the scenes of publishing a book so that they can learn a little bit more about the industry, especially if it's something that they're interested in doing here, or if they're just curious to see what it looks like to get a book out into the market. So and that is what we're doing.
Everyone's curious about that. Now, your show airs live on Saturdays.
Yep.
Typically at 1 o'clock Eastern time on Saturdays, right?
Well, it kind of has varied this month to be able to accommodate the guests that we've had, but traditionally the Behind the Words is airing at 10:30 a.m. Central Time, and then if there's a special time, then we will notify you on our Facebook page, which you can follow at BTW On Air on Facebook and Twitter.
And as everyone who listens to this show knows, all of these shows are also available on demand. So if you've missed a few episodes of your series, they're all available on demand at the Authors on the Air website. Just click the podcast button and then go down to Lori's show, Behind the Words with Lori Hayes, and it'll be the top four episodes that you see there. Now let's get on with the show. In this interview, Susan discusses the origin of Bobby's Diner and how she was able to take what was originally written as a standalone novel and use it as the launch point for a series. Susan has worked hard to turn herself into a prolific writer, often working on several projects at once. She explains how her acting experience helps her to shift back and forth between the dramatically different books she's writing. But of course, we get started by talking about her series, Bobby's Diner.
The original idea came because of my husband's past relationships. He's been married a couple of times. I'm his third wife. And my ex-husband and I are pretty much friends. I mean, we don't have, there's no animosity there, and so we get along. And but Bob's exes don't necessarily appreciate any friendship, which is a shame. So it really, the Bobby's Diner flew out of that idea of perhaps what would happen if an ex-wife and the current wife became friends, and under unusual and not great circumstances, Bobby has died and leaves his diner, the Bobby's Diner, to both women who have not been friends up to now. And so the story takes place in a fictional town in Arizona called Sunnydale. It's fashioned after Wikiup, Arizona, which I just love. It's a pass-through kind of a town. It's a corridor town on your way to other places like Flagstaff or Prescott or, you know, from Phoenix. So it's often traveled, and it's like a midpoint in driving. So, and it has a great little diner. It has a curio shop. It has all these really sweet little things. Of course, it has a gas station. But so that's where that idea came from. But it was almost as a challenge. The writing of Bobby's Diner was a challenge more to me to write quickly and to get out a second book, because I had only finished my first novel, which took an inordinate amount of time. And so I just said, you know, I'm not going to write this slowly. I'm going to write faster, and I want the writing to be quality writing. So, you know, I had to have all of these things happen, but in a shorter amount of time. And that wasn't the impetus of Bobby's Diner, really, the idea, and then I needed to get it out fast. That was me as an author saying, this is what you have to do. This is the idea. Now do it quickly and make it work. And so I finished it, and I stuck it away because it happened too fast. I wrote it, my first novel. It took nearly 8 years to complete and 10 years to be published.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, it was a 10-year process, you know, overall. And so it was too long, you know, and I thought, there is just no way that I can do one book every 10 years, although I know that there are authors who do that. I just didn't want to be one of those authors. I wanted to have more workouts and more often, obviously. And so I wrote Bobby's Diner in a matter of 4 months, which was quite a difference from, of course, 8 years. So so that's how that happened. And then I stuck it away because I had all of these stigmas attached in my head as well as everybody else, I'm sure, that thinks, well, if it's a fast novel, then it can't be a good novel. So I stuck it away and thought nobody would want to ever read that. And then a couple of years later, I was working, you know, continuing working, and I was writing a lot of short stories, a lot of poetry in between. And my husband, God bless him, said, whatever happened to that story? And I had originally titled it Kiss of the Doe. And it, of course, that ties in at some point during the novel, but it wasn't indicative of what the real story was about. So so I changed it to Bobby's Diner. But he asked, whatever happened to that story, Kiss of the Doe? And I said, oh, nobody will want to read that. And he goes, it was good. And so, you know, when you have your husband tell you that, or your spouse say that something that you've done is good, you know, you think about it and you trust that, you know, you have to. And so I sent it out. I started sending it out to publishers. And in 6 months, it was accepted for publication.
And let's take a step back and talk a little bit about the book itself, because it's not normally the kind of thing that I would read. But I got into it so quickly because of the way you opened the book. It's such a what would happen if you put these circumstances together kind of an opening. You've got the wife, the ex-wife, the widow, the ex-wife, and the daughter in the room with an attorney, and he's reading the will. And So as a guy, I'm sort of cringing, like, oh, this isn't going to be good. There's nothing good that can come of this. And then they find that they're going to be sharing the restaurant, and then it just takes off from there. I really like the way you introduced the book, and then I really like the way you just kind of doled out the story, the backstory, very slowly as you're getting into the story itself of the book.
Oh, thank you very much for saying that. It's surprising to me because I do have quite a few male readers, which surprises me because I always considered my writing to be more along the lines of women's fiction. Of the Law was definitely not women's fiction, although there was a very strong female antagonist. The overall plot was about a lawman named Harvey Fleming. So that was definitely, not women's fiction. It was more noir fiction. But since then and since my later writing, I have been writing more along the lines of something that I would think women would be attracted to and not men. And that's, we really don't know who our audience is. So we have to write for one person, and usually, I have that person in my head, and she's always there watching what I'm doing, and she's very much my critic. And so I have to make sure that this girl enjoys that last sentence. And so being that critic, and who is a real-life person, by the way, and knowing her and knowing what she likes, I gear my writing toward a woman, obviously. And so I always feel like, she's guiding me. And so to have these men that send me emails all the time and say, I love that story, and, that was great. And, it's really fulfilling and really an honor. And it's something that I had no clue was going to happen when I initially started writing. So I'm really pleased that you liked it too, Stephen. So thank you for saying that. I appreciate your comments. I wanted it to be interesting to anyone who would read it, but again, focusing on women characters is, really falls under that women's fiction genre.
Well, one of the things, and I'd really like to get your take on this as well. One of my theories is that women's fiction tends to be much more character-driven. Men's fiction tends to be much more action-driven. So I find myself drawn to women suspense writers because I like the suspense, I like the mystery, I like the drama, but without the character, the story just seems hollow to me.
Oh, that's very interesting. I can see, where if we're going to generalize, that would be a way to generalize. I've read some fabulous men's mystery. In fact, I just got done reading Scott Turow's, and he concentrated fully on character. And so it fulfilled that thing that I like to read. I love character-driven novels as well. But again, I like to have a little movement, although I do read a lot of literary fiction and mainstream, and also the classics, which tend to be more character-based, more thought-provoking types of fiction rather than action and plot-driven. Having learned that, men in particular were enjoying this story and having those two aspects, much character, very much character, and then of course the plot driving the story, it would have that balance that you're looking for as a reader. So that makes me happy to hear that. You don't know these things until you speak with someone critically about what you're doing. I never would have thought of it that way, but because the story takes over and then you just plunk along as an author, you're not thinking about, my readers like this, or is this enough balance, things like that. You're really in tune to the character and what's going to happen next with that character, and of course how that character functions within the plot that you have, and if that can be very heavy plot or very light plot. So, you know, we're not thinking that critically about our work when we're writing. We're just totally subsumed within the story.
Now, when I read Bobby's Diner, I knew that at that time there were two, because you just released the third in the series, Sacrifice at Sea. But I knew there were more coming. But when I got to the end of Bobby's Diner, my first thought was, where the heck does she go from here? You obviously had no plans on turning this into a series, did you, when you first wrote it and put it in the drawer?
You know, very astute, Stephen. No, I didn't. And it was only later when somebody contracted Bobby's Diner for a three-book series. So it went from one publisher, and then the rights reverted back to me, and then it went to another publisher who picked it up, who actually contacted me and said, I really like this story, but I'd like to see more books from it. And so, of course, you know, that story was written, although, you know, it has gone through several several edits and editors. Bobby's Diner, the first book, was it was more of a standalone, although it's definitely the companion to Hotter Than Helen. And if you've read Hotter Than Helen, you'll see that where the characters really flow over into that story. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Then we really feel from Hotter Than Helen to Sacrifice at Sea, oh, this is definitely series, because I do leave it off, Hotter Than Helen, it leaves off with them just about boarding the cruise liner to take off to go to St. Thomas in the Caribbean. So, and then in Sacrifice at Sea, all the trouble happens on board the ship. Which was interesting for me because, you know, the storyline is Bobby's Diner, but really, you know, people move around and things can happen outside of work. And so this is really what happens with her. And in Sacrifice at Sea, we really get the sense of a love story taking hold. In Hotter Than Helen, there's a love interest, and then there's a triangle, a love triangle. That happens fairly quick in that story. So, you know, that isn't the overall, the love story isn't the overall idea within that mystery. The, of course, the love triangle is at that point. But then in Sacrifice at Sea, we really get a sense of Georgette falling in love again after Bobby. But, yeah, it's been fun, and I can't wait to write the next one. The next one is going to be very similar to the initial Bobby's Diner book one. But yeah, book four is looking good and very much character driven. I feel like it's more of a women's fiction, although there is the mystery and thriller aspect that I'm throwing into that one as well.
Now, it was so interesting. With the conclusion of Bobby's Diner, everything just wrapped up emotionally and in a very satisfying way. And so as soon as I finished reading it, I went to Amazon and click, I've got to get Hotter Than Helen to find out what happens. How could she carry this story on? And was it hard to pick up the story from something that you'd written a few years previously that you really wrapped up so beautifully and then go on with it?
Yes, and the reason is because I wasn't sure what to do. I mean, there was that mystery element, of course, in the, well, actually thriller element, because I think everybody knows who the bad guy is in all of those books, so that's more of a thriller. So there's the thriller aspect of the story, but it leaned more toward women's fiction, I think. And I'd written it about 3 years before the second novel was written. And so, yeah, it was difficult getting one back into the character's head, but also moving backwards in as far as my writing had been going. I had moved into, I'd already written two more novels in between. Camouflage actually is a novella, And then I had a working title of The Last Maharajan, which the published title is Drowning. And so Drowning and Camouflage were very much women's fiction, with women's fiction plots where it was the relationship that carried the story and not any external type of mystery element, thriller, fantasy, anything like that. It was definitely mainstream fiction based on women's lives and women's relationships. So I had moved away from, really in my thinking, I'd moved away from writing mystery thrillers. And for whatever, I mean, it, you know, we write whatever we write at any given moment, but I had, at that point in time, I'd really, it really jostled me to feel like, oh no, now I have to write mystery again. Oh my goodness. So yeah, it was a little bit of an adjustment, but you know, one thing led to another. I just got the plot in my head and took off with it. So it seemed to work out just fine.
And now are you spending the majority of your time writing mystery or thriller?
No, not really. I write everything. I'm very, I would say ADD when it comes to my my writing. I pop around. I'm definitely what someone would call a generalist. I am writing a thriller, but it's an end-of-days thriller, so it's a real stretch for me. And it's been wonderful. And talk about fulfilling. This writing is just incredible. It's Christian-based, so that's really lovely. And it's also just new. So I have to build a new world. And I've, you know, in staying with women's fiction and mystery, what I had been writing was in the world present. And so now I'm having to move forward in time. And it's a real adjustment to build a new world. Other world building is incredibly fun. It's, you know, you are taken completely out of what it, because really, honestly, this is how easy, you know, current present day world building is you just basically look around your house. If you're a woman that is in a house at the moment and you pick things that are important to that character that day. And so, you know, it's here, it's now, but with this new apocalyptic thriller, I should say end of times thriller. I prefer end of times. It's different. We have to consider everything gone the way we have it now. It's not going to be the same. It's going to be different, period. And so how is it going to be different are the questions that come up. What will the landscape look like? Will the house still be here? You know, things like that. No, probably not. What's going to happen to the house then? Where does it go? Does it blow up? Does it get submerged in water? I mean, you know, so you've got to think of everything. And of course, I've planted my story here on the island where I live, which is a very small island from tip to toe. It's about 25 miles long and about 15 miles, maybe 20 miles wide. And so it's not a very big island. There's about 8,000 people who live here. It's a very small place, small town feel, and everything is very close to the water. Even in the mainland, you know, or I'm sorry, inland. When you're inland, you can get to the water within, you know, 12 minutes. So it wouldn't be unusual for if the island were to be attacked by an end of times event, to be submerged or to be cracked open or to, you know, whatever. So the water plays a big part in this story as well. So it's a lot of fun. And being from Phoenix, Arizona, my, you know, 39 years of my life, it's different. I mean, it's a different lifestyle, and the landscape is entirely different. And so it's just so much fun to play with what might be.
Let's talk about the world building for a minute, because it's,
sure.
There are people that I've spoken with who really get carried away with world building. They just spend inordinate amounts of time on it. And you're a person who spent 8 years writing her first book. How much time did you spend with the world building?
The world building, well, there are two points of the world building. I wanted to have the event be the key part of the End of Times thriller, because honestly, that's the major thrust of the book. There's an End of Times event and everything changes. So that takes place fairly quick. We see it happening, and what happens is she has a boat, so luckily she has a boat, but she also has two animals in tow. So we're moved from the place that is being just totally demolished around her into the boat. So she's encapsulated in these two first scenes into the boat and then out onto the water. So we're out on the water quite a while. And the reason I want her to be out on the water quite a while until we meet up with the antagonistic group is because I want readers to sense how alone she is. I want that, and because basically the island is gone and all she has is a boat. She's running out of food, and she's got two animals she has to take care of on a boat. So I wanted that sense of desperation, extreme loneliness, and just a sense of being totally, totally departed from anything that anyone might be used to. So the boat scene is taking a little bit of more time than the End of Times part did, but it's already, you know, it's moving out into back to the island, which is basically demolished. But she has to get back there. She's going to get food. So she's got to go back, you know, and it's just not there anymore, really. You know, there's parts of it. So.
That you mentioned earlier, the number of different things that you work on at any given time. I was at your website earlier today, and I can't remember which tab it was, but there was a tab basically that outlined all of the different things that you were working on right now. And
yeah.
It looked like it might have been a few weeks old, but I was exhausted just reading it. How do you keep it all straight?
Well, I am lucky enough, or I should say blessed enough, to be able to write full-time. My books are selling, and, you know, I have a wonderful husband who has supported me through thick and thin. So I am very fortunate to be able to sit and do this all day long. And so, you know, I'll write on any given day for 2-3 hours, and then I'll pop over and blog, and then I'll pop over and start working on another story. I've got a set of short stories that I'm working through, which is part of my daily writing. Plus, I've got two novels that are in progress. Sacrifice at Sea now bumped off of that list. I think that was up on the top. And then I've got Ashatos, which is the End of Times thriller. It's a series of 7 books over the 7 years of tribulation. That's basically what those books will encompass.
Okay.
So, and then I have, of course, Bobby's Diner, book 4, which isn't on my list yet. I've only got the outline just done. So, and then I've got Way of the Wild Wood. And Way of the Wild Wood is it's an effort in more mainstream fiction with heavy fantasy and possibly even magical realism aspects to it. So it's very ethereal and a lot of fun to write, and but also takes place in the early 70s. So we're not dealing with the same technology that we have now. I balance it just because I have 10, 12 hours a day that I work, and I, so everything will get worked on at some point in those 10 or 12 hours. And that includes, you know, the administrative stuff of having book selling and marketing and all of that. So, but, you know, I consider it a business. It's also, you know, it's an art form to write, of course, but then there's a business aspect, and we have to be aware of that when we go into this career of writing.
Well, just as an example, you would, in any given day, go from the desert in your fictional town outside of Phoenix to a boat above your current home that's submerged in water, and then be dealing with a fantasy story later in the day. How do you get yourself in those three different, so completely different mindsets to write?
Well, first I read my character analysis for the main character, because they're the one that carries the story along. So I look at the character analysis, and then I look at the outline, and then I review what I've written, and then I get right into it. I mean, it doesn't take a long time for me to set myself in the character's shoes. And so, and then, you know, basically once you put on their shoes, all you have to do is zip up their skin around your head, and you're in the character, and you're seeing what they're seeing, and you're in their scenes, and you're acting with people that pop into each scene. And so it's easy for me to get into character, and I'm not sure if that's common for authors. I have a sense that it probably is, but what makes it easy for me, or at least easier maybe, is that I have an acting background. And so the acting really helps me understand my character and get into character.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very helpful. And I often think that, you know, it wouldn't be bad for authors not only to, you know, or emerging writers, not only to study writing and craft and all of that, and of course the business side of it, but also it wouldn't hurt to take some acting classes to understand the development of character. You know, it's second nature to me now, because I acted for years when I was in Phoenix, and so it's that part came really at my embryonic stage of writing. So when I was acting, I was acting for hours throughout the week, and then my writing was starting to take hold. I really found that I didn't enjoy being on stage as an actor, having to remember lines. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't enjoy public speaking. I love it, because I know the topic so intimately when it comes to writing and business of writing and publishing and all of that, that I enjoy sharing that. But having to remember lines was just awful for me. I much prefer writing scenes, being backstage somehow, and just having the story my part of the my contribution to a play or to a work that would be read perhaps. But no, I didn't enjoy the acting very much.
Is the public speaking and the teaching that you do a pleasant diversion from the constant writing?
I don't think anything is a pleasant diversion from writing. I think anytime we're diverted from writing, it's irritating at best. I don't enjoy doing anything as much as I do writing. So, you know, I feel it's a responsibility. I feel that, well, my mentor was so good to me that he took me by the hand and helped me. So I have to, in all consciousness, do the same for others. That's just how I feel about it. But for it to be a happy diversion, not really. It's more, and maybe it would be if I was living on the mainland, but I'm on an island. And so, like we were talking a little bit before, Stephen, it takes 3 hours of travel time just to get off the island and then get back. That's on the water, on the ferry. That doesn't include the wait time for a ferry, and it doesn't include the travel time in the car or in a plane to get to wherever you're supposed to be. Now, if events happen in the evening, I have to stay over. So, you know, I can write in the evenings when I stay over, and that makes me happy. Traveling and having to go off the island is very difficult. So it's not exactly, you know, something that I look forward to doing. I feel it more as an obligation and responsibility to other writers for me to go and speak.
Now, you mentioned your mentor. Were you talking about Michael Collins?
I was. He was amazing.
How did you meet him?
I met him at a conference. He was speaking at the Northwest Book Fest. It was the 2003 Northwest Book Fest. And then I attended a very intimate conference, and he was there teaching again. And one of the things that we were supposed to do was hand in 5 pages of our current work, or whatever work we wanted to, really, for him to critique and speak about. And the session wasn't a critique. He basically said, I really like your writing, and I'll be happy to mentor you.
Wow.
And I was thrilled. I was stunned. I really had no words. And so it was a huge honor, because it's a big time commitment for an author to take on some idiot novice, you know. And I shouldn't say that, because I mentor people. They're not idiots.
Obviously, you were referring to yourself then.
I was
in 2003.
I was totally referring to myself, because that's how I felt. I felt like, oh my gosh, you know, why would anybody, you know? It comes from lack of security about your work, and I think that's the biggest problem writers have, is they don't feel that their writing is worthy, and that's very sad to me, because it usually is, and we just don't see it. We see, you know, what we read, and then compare what we read to our own work. Well, it might be vastly different, but it might be just as good too. So it's an unfair thing that we do to ourselves. It's a huge time commitment, and it was a great honor for him. He's the author of his last novel, because he didn't enjoy the publishing industry any longer, so he basically stopped writing. I mean, at least he stopped publishing. I doubt if he stopped writing, honestly. But his last novel was called Death of a Writer, and the novel before that was The Resurrectionists, and the novel before that was The Lost Souls. And then he was shortlisted in the 2000 Man Booker Award for his Keepers of Truth. And all of the, but he has like 7 or 8 books out. They're all fabulous, just lovely writing. And he's Irish, so he has all of that James Joyce influence, and it's absolutely phenomenal to read his work.
I didn't realize he had stopped publishing.
Yeah, I know. What a drag.
And too bad, yes.
Definitely too bad. He is a fabulous author, and his contributions were remarkable. So I hope he decides at some point to do it again.
So when you're mentoring people, what's that process like for you and for them?
Well, see, now this is the thing. This is a distraction that I actually do really enjoy, because as we talk about our books and art, and we are doing the shop talk like you and I are, Stephen, I love that. I love talking about writing and about books and about, you know, the writer's life and all of that, everything that goes with it. I think it's fascinating, and I think it's fun. And so this is basically what we do. Many of my mentor students have direct questions. They also have very ambiguous questions. So depending on what they want out of me, that's where the sessions move to. You know, it's not me trying to drive something into somebody's head. If we're talking craft, then I'll go over some of the, and I'm doing finger quotes here, rules of writing, which, you know, rules of writing, as with any art, should be just written down, memorized, and then set fire to, because we don't, it's an art. We can do whatever we damn well please, right? So if you feel like moving from first person to second person to third person to fourth person, whoever that is, do it. You know what I'm saying? You know, do it. It's, and if it works, great. If it doesn't, change it. I mean, it's not like it's etched in a rock. You know, we can actually change it, especially with our computers being so flexible. You know, we are flexible just simply because of the tools we use now. So try it out, you know, flex your brain and see what happens. But yeah, so anything comes from a mentor session, and it's usually very inspirational, definitely motivational, if not for the student, definitely for me. So I enjoy it a lot, yeah.
It's funny, you were talking earlier about the idea of reading our own work and comparing it to what we're currently reading. And I, of course, do the same thing. I'm sure that we all do. And every so often, I'll catch myself reading something that I've written and going, that's pretty good. And then I'll just slap myself back. And it's like, no, it's not. You're not there yet. You're
Isn't
not even
terrible?
Close to that. Yes, it is.
It's not fair. It's not a fair thing to do. And we're usually wrong, because our knee-jerk subconscious reaction to something is usually the correct reaction. Sometimes it's wrong, sometimes it's off. But usually when our subconscious is driving our writing, it's going to be correct. And we will then go back, and what we can do is stay with the idea. We can tweak the words. We can make the words prettier and do whatnot and sentence structure and all of that. We can make art pretty. But what we worry with is the sketching. And we shouldn't worry with the sketching, because everybody knows the outlines. Everybody knows I can draw my own face. It might look like a caricature when I get done, but it was correct for my subconscious. What I can do later is come in and paint it out and fan out some wrinkles, and, you know, because I'm going to do that.
Artistic license.
Exactly. But we can make it prettier, but where we shouldn't mess with it is what the sketch, the bare bones of our writing should remain, you know, there. And even if we delete parts, you know. We'll go, oh, this is so out of what I, it's extra. All I need to do is erase that. You know what I mean? So, but we need to trust our subconscious on our first draft. We just need to get our words out onto the paper and get it done, and then come back and go over it and over it and over it to make it the perfect thing, you know, the perfect story. So, we don't trust ourselves, and it's an unfair thing that we do, because we should. We should be trusting ourselves more, because we're the ones that know the story. We know the character. You know, to second guess ourselves is like schizophrenic.
Now, for people that normally listen to my show, this is the kind of conversation that you have on your weekly show, Dialogue Between the Lines, with your author friends, some of whom are incredibly big names and some of whom are less well-known but are fascinating people to listen to.
Yeah.
Your show is on Thursdays at 1 o'clock Eastern time, I think. Is that right?
That is correct, yes. Thank you for mentioning that.
You're very welcome. People can also find you at your website, SusanWingate.com. You're on Facebook, you're on Twitter, you're in all of the places that authors need to be. And one of the things I notice about you is that you don't spend a lot of time there. You're actually working.
Yes.
And that's admirable.
Thank you.
I know that you have other commitments today, and we actually had to move this recording session up a little bit because of those commitments, so we'll cut it a little bit short, but I really want to thank you for your time. It's been fun chatting with you. I really enjoyed Bobby's Diner and Hotter Than Helen, and I'm looking forward to Sacrifice at Sea.
as well as the new books that you're talking about. The End of Times book sounds first of seven, an ambitious project and something that sounds very interesting.
Well, thank you very much, Stephen, for having me on your show. I really appreciate your time.
This show is owned and copyrighted in full by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC, produced by Pam Stack. This is Stephen Campbell with Murders, Mysteries, and Mayhem, and we hope you've enjoyed this program. If you'd like to stay up to date with show schedules and other news, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and at www.authorsontheair.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.